You are listening to Help for HD Live, the first podcast created for families living with Huntington's and juvenile Huntington's disease. Don't forget to find us on iTunes, Blog Talk, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also search over 500 archived episodes and other projects at helpforhd.org. To watch us in person, find Help for HD TV on YouTube and subscribe and ring the bell for notifications on new content. Help for HD Live is going on air in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to Help for HD Live. This podcast is made possible because of a grant from Teva Pharmaceuticals, Neurocrine Biosciences, and the Griffin Foundation. I'm your host, Lauren Holder, and today is a very special day. As most of you know, Help for HD Live is the first ever podcast for the HD community. We've had over 130,000 listeners and we have over 500 episodes available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk, Spotify, and social streams. Today, we are introducing a new series on the show called HD Uncut. So these will be monthly shows with the HD community about real, true, and uncut topics, totally uncensored. And if you are interested in participating, please reach out to me via email. My email is lauren@helpforhd.org. But it's only appropriate that we have this amazing guest on today for our first HD Uncut show because Chris Brown is never afraid of being himself and of speaking up when he needs to. He's fun-loving, so full of energy, and a really amazing advocate for the HD community. So Chris, thanks so much for joining me today for our first HD Uncut show.
Thank you so much for having me, Lauren. I was super excited when I saw your post. When I saw you request me, and I was like, well, you know, why not?
So let's start off with your HD story and just give people an idea of how HD affects you and your family.
All right. Well, my mom had Huntington's disease. She was a foster child, so we were unaware of what was going on for quite a while before we figured it all out. But I usually don't tell this part of the story, but like our religion, we didn't go to the doctor, so it was what it was. But like, we didn't go to the doctor, and so I will say that honestly, my mom started getting sick probably, Lauren, like eight years before we even
realized. And
yeah, before, well, we knew, but we were just like adapting and like putting our head like in the sand and like just like coping and just not talking about it, just like, this is happening, we don't know what's happening, but we'll just do what we have to do. And things just kind of like kept going and going, and you know, like it progresses and progresses and progresses. So it's, you know, it's not like a one thing happens and then we, you know, adapt to that and then that's, you know, like the way it is. No, it's like one thing happens and another thing happens and something else happens and something else. It's just a never ending.
Yeah, you get used to one new normal and then you have to do another new normal. It's never never static.
Right. Absolutely. And so it wasn't until my mom had a brain aneurysm and like my dad was forced to like call 911 and like she was helicoptered to the hospital and like surgery was done, and like then they were like, well, what's this stuff going on? And we were like, oh, well, she's been this way for a while and this stuff's been going on. And then like one thing led to another, and then she ended up being diagnosed maybe like a few months after that. And then, you know, life went on, And well, actually, no, I will say that when she found out what was going on, the doctor literally came into the hospital room and and said, "Hey, so we figured out what's going on, with Mrs. Brown. She has Huntington's disease." And then he starts saying what Huntington's disease is, and then he like looks at me and is like, "Are you her son?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He was like, "Well, you're at 50% for having this too." And like this all happened in a matter of dad had called and said, "Chris, they want us at the hospital. They found that they didn't know what's going on. Can you be here on this day or whatever?" And I was like, "Okay, yeah." And so I got there, and so it's like we find out what it is, and like I found out too that like I was at risk for it all at the same time. And then, sure enough, my dad finally started getting in touch with my mom's other brothers and sisters that they had all been separated at when they went into the foster system. And like come to find out all of them had it,
Oh my God.
or some had died, some were in nursing homes, or some were still at home having it. And it was like, wow, and then mom eventually went into the nursing home when she was there for 6 years, and then she eventually passed when she was 54. She went in a nursing home when she was 48. Yeah, and then she died when she was 54. She was there for 6 years in a nursing home. Yeah. Of course, putting her in a nursing home was, we felt so horrible and so bad. And but she actually, showed some improvement and some sense of quality of life improvement by being in a nursing home. So it was a it was a just a thing that every Huntington's patient family has to go through and make that decision. But yeah, we did that, and then she eventually succumbed to aspirating, silent aspirating, because she couldn't control her swallowing, and getting pneumonia and lost all this weight. And she just passed away one night, middle of the night, the way we kind of prayed she would. And she didn't go on a feeding tube. We had the option of, like, a month before she died, we had an option of putting her on a feeding tube, and we decided not to. Because there wasn't anything, time wasn't her friend anymore, and it had been 14 years, and we were like, and eating was her thing, because like she loved to eat, like she loved to eat.
My dad was a foodie too.
Yeah. And so she we were like, it's robbed her of everything, like everything. Like now we're going to put her on a feeding tube just to like see her, still decline. It's not like, oh, we're going to put her on a feeding tube, she's going to get better. No, she was only going to add time. And time wasn't her friend. I've always said that it's like, it just wasn't her friend. And I always make sure I say that that's a decision for every family. You never want to make somebody feel like adding, I mean, putting their family on, wanting more time with their family members is a bad thing. I wish to God I still had more time with her, but for us, it was just, my dad was like, "We have to make this decision." Me and my sister and him was like, "We have to make, y'all have 2 days to think about this, and we're making the decision, and we're never going to question it again. We're never going to talk about it again. It's never, ever coming up for discussion again after we make it." And my sister said yes, me and dad said it no, and we haven't talked about it since.
So, how old were you when you guys like when you found out that you were at risk for it?
I was, let's see, I was in college. I'm going to say I was 20, maybe 21,
How
2021.
did that make you feel, being in college 2021 and finding out that you're at risk for this disease?
Well, here's the thing. Well, of course, it like jolted me, it bolted me, it it rocked me. It scared the daylights out of me. But I didn't have time to, in the moment, I didn't give myself time, I would say, to dwell on it, because Dad needed my help so much. Mom needed my help so much. I was in college. I was trying to escape a little by going away to college. And so like that initial...
was kind of just ignore it. Like, maybe if you ignore it, you can just keep on going.
I mean,
how long did that last?
Shut up.
I'm just curious.
I would say that it lasted until she passed. Until she passed. I was able to ignore it until she, well, not ignore it. I was able to, like, keep the voices at a moderate, you know, coping level of silence. You know, I would still sneak away and Google and stuff, and, you know, or you know, on a long drive, you know, it'll sneak up
stuff and,
But yeah, I just, you know, I was just like, I was in this forward moving process moment in my life. So I was like, you know, okay, you know,
it'll not a time to worry about it.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. You know, I have time. Things out. Yeah. And so when she passed, I was 28 when she passed. So then when after she passed, I was like, I remember thinking like, okay, now that mom is gone, and you know, like I was going through that whole grieving process, I was like, okay, I can start to think about me. Like, where does this like lead me? And Grayson, get back. I moved to DC and I started going to a support group. I reached out to Hope Keller.
Yeah.
At Georgetown. And they had a support group and I started going there. And so that was like my first way of like, okay, let me find out, you know, what's going on. I was like, surely, you know, there's things in the works that my mom didn't never had access to, or in Mississippi, and you know, like in a small town with limited, you know, resources. And I was like, surely I can, like, you know, educate myself about this, find out what's going on, and you know, bring some type of, you know, because I remember having the feeling like I would tell people my mom died from Huntington's, they'd be like, what's Huntington's? And like, that would like boil my blood, you know, because like she suffered for 14 years. And then when you tell somebody, oh, she died from Huntington's, they're like, what's that? And it's like, really? You know? Like, it would just hurt my feelings for her and for me. And it would make me mad too. And so I was like, if I just find out, you know, what this is, you know, and like, you know, be proactive and, you know, I get involved and like try to make my story different from hers to bring validation to all the suffering that she went through, you know, and she wouldn't have like suffered and died from nothing, like all her suffering and dying and like not having it. If I do something to change that, then, you know?
I do know. So you get to a point where you are ready to take on HD. kind of hit the ground running and start learning about it. And so did you choose to test?
Yes, I did. I went through that whole process. So I found out, you know, there was a whole testing process. And by starting, go to the doctor, go to see Dr. Anderson in Georgetown. And I was like, and so I went through years. That was years and years. I would say from 29 to, I would say, 34. 34. Because in 2016 is when I got tested. So I would say from, for like 4 years, I was contemplating, like, should I get tested? Should I not get tested? Should I get tested? Should I not get tested? I go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Oh my God, for years and years and years and years. Should I get tested? Should I not get tested? And I remember at the support group one night, I asked Hope Keller, I said, how do I know when if I want to get tested? Because I said, I can have 5 days in a row where I say, okay, I'd come up with a positive reason, a valid reason to get tested. And then the next 5 days, I have five valid reasons not to get tested. I was like, I mean, there's just no ground, like nothing that, you know, that grounds me and makes me feel like, okay, this outweighs everything, you know, reason. And so then she said to me verbatim, Chris, when your days of wanting to get tested outweighs your days of not wanting to get tested. And I was like, huh? She was like, yeah. She was like, you'll come. I said, will that day come? She was like, yes, it will. And sure enough, fast forward year, maybe 2 years after that, I was like, okay, I want to get tested. It's time. I want to get tested. And I did. And so I started the process. It was a 3 month process. I ended up adding a month to it because I was the blood draw. I was the week of blood draw. I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't do this. So I called it and pushed it back another month.
Yeah. That fear, once they get that blood, like, oh right. God, it's all over now.
Right, right. Because I knew, like, if I did the blood draw, I wasn't going to cancel the results day, you know? Right. So if anything was had a chance of being canceled was the blood draw day, you know, postpone and push it back. And so I added a month to it. And it was very, oh, so, so scary. So scary. I got my results, and my CAG chromosome repeat was 44, and I tested positive for Huntington's disease. And I was like, of course you have it. What do you think? What were you thinking? You know? And like, I don't know why, because now looking back, I didn't know. But at the time, I was like, I know I have it. And I don't know why, because I didn't know.
Oh, no, I did the same thing. Like, I knew. Like, right. I knew before I went, like, I have it. Yeah. This is, you know, and everybody was like, oh, no, there's no way that you have it, you know. And I was like, no. I'm going to have it. And so I went in prepared for having it. And I don't know about you, but for me, I had a sense of relief just knowing, right? Like, it's no longer a question. Now I have something that I know, and now I can go from there. So it was a little bit of relief along with the roller coaster of emotions that came after.
Yeah. So. It was, I remember laughing. I was like, of course you do. What do you mean 50% of you don't? I mean, yes, I get it. Yes, just 50-50. Great, get back. Get back. You got all this room to play. And so I had set myself up. I had a support group around. I had a support
system.
Around the foundation yeah. around me. You know, I had friends, I had social workers, I had therapists, I had my family, I had friends, I had Chandler, Dr. Anderson, and so yeah, that was a Friday morning, and the whole weekend I had stuff planned the entire weekend to like keep me busy. You know, I knew Monday was coming, I knew the weekend was gonna end. You know, my brother's gonna have to go back home, and you know, my friend's gonna have to go back, you know, like, and I was gonna have to be left alone with my thoughts. And they did come, and you know, and the information, it hurts, and it just you know, it takes away everything. And I see, I shouldn't, and it shouldn't. Because I guess I would say that, like, I took power of it. I took the rings. I took, I was like, okay, what can I do? What can I do? And so I was like, okay, I gotta do something to make my story, again, different from my mom's. And so I just dove in. Girl, with doing walks and fundraising and conferences and just doing every single thing I could to try to like make my story different from my mom's, you know, and to like bring awareness. And I did that, but like doing that, Lauren, is a slippery slope. And I will say that because it's a two-edged sword. Getting involved in that way brings a lot of like pain also. It's not like people say, oh, you're so great, you're doing this, you're great. And like, I would do it again. I would the same way. But looking back, and like now that I'm like at the age now where I see signs, and like I know that it's starting, and get back, Grayson, you get back, go back. Now that I'm seeing signs, and you know, and having to start a little medication here for this and a little medication here for that, you know, and or noticing people say, oh, you know, people be it, not just being funny, but like they'll say, oh, Chris, why you do that? So why you do that? And I'm just like, shit, you know, shit.
It's the perfect response. Yep.
You know, like you write stuff off for years. You know, oh, I've wrote off so many things, girl. You know, oh, I'm crazy, oh, I'm quirky, oh, I'm this, oh, I'm that, you know, I'm this, I'm that. And, no, but, like, it's a two-edged sword with having, being so involved, because you know so much, and you make yourself so vulnerable, and you put yourself out there, and you are seeing everything, you know, with them under a microscope, and you're opening yourself up for so much letdown, and you know, with trials and things of that nature. But the things I've gained, I feel like, are just as valuable as the more valuable than the things that have hurt me. But it doesn't negate that knowing so much and being so involved doesn't have a price. You know, just like somebody else who would say, you know, they find out, then they stay in their little, you know, bubble, and they take care of their family, and they just, you know, head in the sand type people. And so I'd never judge people who say, no, I don't want to, that's not the road for me. You know, I'm just want to live my life, my family, and enjoy what I have. And, you know, I get it. I get it. I do. But, yeah, but I am glad, but I will be a voice for you is what I said. And so and that's why I don't regret it, because that's a lot of people who don't have the option, or they're, you know, they're scared, or they have their reasons, and they're valid reasons. And they should be, those reasons should be respected. And so I just feel like, well, I love talking anyway. I got a big mouth anyway, so I'm going to put it to use.
Well, and you're great at doing it. I mean, you're great. It's, somebody once told me that what we do with advocacy and being willing to speak up about our story and stuff is very unique, because we're taking on something that's extremely draining and painful. And most people can't do that. But for us, it's more of a calling, you know, to help not only others, but ourselves in a way, by being so open and raw. And, but it's a unique thing that most people cannot do. So, the fact that you do it is amazing, despite the pain, because I do know the pain. And, you know, you're talking about, realizing symptoms and stuff. And that is something that I, you know, I don't talk much about right now, but I have recently been diagnosed with a neurocognitive disorder related to HD. And, that's hard. It's hard to hear that, right? Like, to know that the things that you've been seeing are actually true, right? The deficits are actually there.
Not to cut you off, Lauren, but yeah, like I'll just say it. I'm starting to suffer from apathy. I'm starting to get help for it, but it's right. Been starting. Like I'm just like, and I don't want to talk about it because people be like, apathy, Chris, you're all over the place all the time, doing this and doing that, doing this, doing that. And you're like, and I'm like,
but I'm forcing myself too.
right. And I was like, but what you don't see is that with me in the morning when I wake up and I just don't want to get out of the bed.
Yes. Yes. Like,
I do not want, and it's hard. And then I don't until I have to do something, you know? And
Do you find that when you do finally get up and you're doing things, like, you get tired easier for having to put forth that effort? Because that's one of my problems, is just this absolute fatigue from having to pretend to be normal. And, you know, my brain is working harder to be normal, to remain normal and do the things I need to do. And then I'm just so exhausted.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sitting there with my friends. I'm just like, man, I wish I was at home.
Yeah.
Having fun. I can even be having fun.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, I would love to be at home. Man, I want to be at home.
And I'm just like, that's not me. I'm using
wanting to go home.
Right. But the great thing is, you're so aware of yourself that you know, okay, well, this is what I'm experiencing. So I need to find something to help me, right? Like, that's what's so good about where we are in our disease, is that we are aware of what's going on.
Yes.
I want to delve into, this is probably really personal and you don't have to answer it, but are you experiencing anything else other than the apathy?
My short-term memory is horrible. My apathy is horrible. My focus is horrible. My depression is horrible. My anxiety is horrible. My ability to keep a train of thought is, like, harder. My ability to just strike up conversations with people, and have word recall is bad.
Word recall.
Yeah. Yes. Oh God. My those are seven things right there. That are like,
yeah.
And so my brain, I mean, I'm just having to put forth some, my math, forget it. Being able to like pivot quickly or respond quickly, or, well, I can, yes and no. Like I'm okay. You know, like I can, you know, if I'm driving, I can immediately make a decision, you know? But like I see it happening in ways that affect me at work or in social life or or in my personal life with responsibilities. I just have to overcompensate to keep to keep things, you know, to make things, to keep
keep looking
myself
normal.
And other people from, you know, seeing it. And I don't know how I overcompensate.
So my dad used to, I mean, he was symptomatic, but he used to be able, like I would tell him what, because he'd ask me, he's like, do you see what I'm doing? And I would be like, yeah, you know, you have this symptom here. Well, then he'd focus on the one symptom that now he knew that he was aware, and it would get better. And then he would work on certain things, like, you know, just because our brains are so good with rewiring and with adapting and stuff. So he would work on that one little thing so he could do really well with that. But then as his disease progressed, you would start to see another symptom get worse because he was focused so much on making that one symptom better. And he got to a point where he just couldn't do it anymore. He couldn't focus on trying to make all of them better. But he used to describe it to me like that. He would say, okay, well, you tell me what you see. And then he'd focus on the one symptom and you could see him getting better with it. And then just as he progressed, he just couldn't control the other ones that were, he was putting back here, you know? So, but it was really interesting to watch because now I can see what he's talking about and how hard it was for him to do that. Because he had to really focus and put energy towards that. So it makes sense about the overcompensating and really trying to work on that.
Right, right. I also, as we were talking, I remember some other things that like I'm seeing myself lose interest in things or like, or just have like, no, I feel like I'm not interested in things anymore in a way. Like,
it doesn't bring you as much pleasure to think about the things that you used to, like the stuff that you used to do.
No, I just don't have, I don't have desire to like do things like hobbies or.
Gotcha.
Or like continuous day-to-day things that would, you know, keep me busy.
Right.
Like, I just, I don't know. It's so weird to say out loud. I'm like,
it's not weird though. I totally get what you're saying. I'm letting you talk because I, you know,
I
experience things too, but I want to hear, you know, what you are experiencing because I think that especially one of the problems that I think we have in the community is we haven't heard from those in this pre-symptomatic/prodromal state. of what's going on and being so aware of ourselves of what's going on. And it's a new territory. And so I like hearing what other people are going through, because most of the time I feel crazy, right? Like,
right. Well, I mean, if you really want me to say it, I'm on meds. I say this, Lauren, but like, I am not ever going to commit suicide, but I think about suicide.
Yeah. Well, but that's, yeah.
Like, oh my God. Like, I say, wouldn't it be nice if I could like have, like, just have a funeral before I die, and then like just everybody be okay with me doing this, and then I just take too many pills, go to sleep, and not wake up. Wouldn't that be amazing? Like, I find joy in that thought.
Mm-hmm.
I find joy in the thought of not waking up.
Do you think that that's because you have control over how you die versus letting HD do the work? Or do you think it's just that passive thought that goes through? Because look, I've had them too. I've had those passive thoughts, and it sucks, right? Because then you, for me at least, I sit there and I go, oh God, well, now I feel guilty for having a thought because I'm not supposed to have any of these. And it becomes this snowball to my depression where then I am beating myself up for something that's actually pretty common, you know, where people have passive suicidal thoughts with HD. So, so I'm curious, you feel like it's just it's because you can then control, the way you go, or, is it more just the passive type thing?
I think for me, it's not necessarily control, because like, I've never been a person who wants control. Like, I'm just not a control person. I think it just genuinely comes from me saying, I'm not going to do Huntington's.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, maybe that is a sense of control, but like for me, I'm it's like an escape. Like, how do I escape something I can't control? And right. I feel like it would be so awesome to be able to escape, you right. know, the next 14 years, you know.
Yeah, of the downhill slide.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Because like after all I've done to not let this happen, after all the clinical trials and after, you know, all the stuff that I've done for these past 6 years, Lauren, and I'm like tired, and I'm just like, okay, I've done all that, you know, and there's still nothing. And like, so whenever I'm at like 42, I just want to be like, you know, okay, I'm at 42. By then I'm having, you know, because like I'm by myself. I don't have anybody. It's just me and my great-great. Grayson has a godparents who already said they'll take him for me. I will.
Best dog ever.
I will just, you know, just not do it, and I won't have to hurt all the people that, well, like for me, I have these panicky moments where I'm like, oh my God, like I have nobody, like mm-hmm. I am alone. I mean, I'm not, but like I am when it comes to keeping it real. Like, who's gonna pay my bills when I can't pay my bills? Who's gonna come and take care of my house? Because, you know, it's a very slow process. It's not like I'm going to wake up tomorrow and everything's going to fall out of the ceiling.
Right.
It's going, oh, I'm going to start losing my job. I'm going to start, like, having trouble at work. I'm going to start having trouble taking care of my responsibilities. I'm going to start having trouble driving. I'm going to start having trouble doing everything that I do for myself. And I don't have anybody who can literally you know, say, okay, Chris, just stay at home and I'll take care of the bills. I'll take care of you. And during all that, you know, excruciating time of slowly losing, you know, my ability to do things. So I have people who are going to be there when, like, okay, I've lost my job, I've lost my apartment, Grayson isn't being fed, and they're going to step in, you know. You know, I have those people, but I don't have anybody who's going to, you know, talk to my boss or talk to my, you know, I don't have anybody who's going to be there in the thick of it during the small, you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. Do you think, let me ask you a question related to that.
Uh-huh.
So obviously that's a huge problem, right? Like knowing that you don't have a significant other who's going to come in and take on those responsibilities. Do you think it's the responsibility of the organizations, the nonprofit organizations that we have, the disease groups, to help with that? Like being able to come in and explain things to your boss, or being able to provide resources that you may not be able to find yourself, you know, being that you are alone. Like, do you feel that there's a lack there that could be worked on?
Lauren, girl, you're opening up a...
Look, it's uncut.
Lauren, girl, you are being what I call messy, and I love it.
Yeah, it's what I do.
Girl, that would be... amazing.
Yeah.
It's not there. It's not even remotely there. I mean, long as you can be proactive and taking care of yourself, the organizations probably offer something maybe, but girl, you trying to make me cuss.
So, no. Okay. No. So let's go into another route with this. let's see. So I'm trying to think of how to word what I'm wanting to say.
Okay.
What things you feel that we are lacking in the community, whatever it is, it can be anything. That we need improvement on, you know, like right away.
Mm-hmm. First off, I've always been an advocate for social workers. We need people on the ground who are helping us. I'm not talking about Lauren, there's a social worker here. We have a social worker in Memphis. Memphis here, not in Tennessee here, in my region. You know how far away she lives from me?
How far?
3 hours. and then you know what? She's part-time.
So her focus is probably not all HD.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, so that's a huge problem. Thankfully, I have insurance. Thankfully, I'm going to see a doctor that's local here. And thankfully, they have a social worker there, and who is not funded by HD or anything. It's just something that's at this clinic, and they see patients that have issues, you know, genetic issues or whatever. And so I can go in on clinic day and see a speechologist and these different specialties, people who, and so you, but you asked specifically, could HD community.
The things we need now, like what you think we need right now that needs to be worked on.
Social workers who are out there offering resources or getting therapy for people, getting, you know, like mental health, access for
There's
people.
There's a huge gap for mental health.
Educating therapists
Yes.
About HD so that they can take on HD patients.
Yes.
100%. Who are dealing with the, you know, the mental
the mental health. Yeah.
Depression and
Yeah, I'm with you. That is probably my top one right there is mental health.
Yeah.
And and having something change there.
Right. Yes, yes. Educated therapists, social workers, those are so big. Those two right there are big. I could go on for days talking about those two. I can't even get to a third one. But for me, it's just like mental health. And I had the same issue when I was being in doing clinical trials for people. And they would say, oh, we don't offer, you know, like, oh, we can't afford to have a patient advocate. And I'm like, if you can't afford to have a patient advocate, you can't afford to have a to put on a clinical trial, because you don't have anyone who is looking out for the well-being of the patient. We're left at your mercy, and you give zero freaks about me. You want this drug to work so you can make all this money. And fine, okay, great, but.
Right. We need somebody who is looking out for us when it comes to clinical trials,
because
on top of speeding it up, because like, as we said, we were both on the FDA listening session together. And I mean, it's a huge problem, this urgency, this feeling of we are running out of time. Every time, you know, there's a setback, it is literally restarting a clock for us. And so not only speeding things up, but also, like you said, having somebody that is a patient advocate that is concerned for our well-being, not just looking at the end points.
Or at least have a freaking, I don't know, a social worker or therapist or somebody come by during your business. You know, like, okay, I'm going to do your trial. I'll do your trial. What are you going to do for me? Oh, I'll give you $100 for every visit. Screw right. you. Screw you.
Right. Screw doesn't help us. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or the last CEO that I talked to said to a Zoom call with 50 people, trust me, guys, we want this bad, just as bad as you do.
Right. But we're the ones who, this is our life. Like, these are our lives. This is not.
Trust me, guys.
Yeah.
We want this just as bad as you do. So we'll be trying to get the things, the ball rolling on, because somebody asked a question. Trust me, guys. We want this just as bad as you do.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. I hear you on that.
You are scum of the earth. And now they're trying to come back for, I hear they are. If they do, I will be at their office. I have the address in Rochester, New York. I will be there. Lauren, girl, I'm going to be on the news. I don't know what news channel is in Rochester, New York. I will be on the news. On the news.
Hey, you know what? One of the things that we've learned is that we've got to get loud, right? Like, us being right here where we are, and I know everybody's tired, I know everybody, like, I feel it too, I'm exhausted for fighting, you know, having to fight and everything, but the disease communities that have gotten the help are the disease communities that have gotten loud,
right?
And so at some point we have to be in order to get where we need to be, and that time is now, because we don't have the time for later. So, I hear you. I do.
Yeah. I think that should be our thing. Let's get loud.
We need to put that to something. I'll have to figure out how we get that approved.
go into that, what you just said.
Do what now?
But like, when you dream of us getting loud, what is our getting loud, like, when you, like, dream of Huntington's getting
loud?
Yeah, what does it look like in your
Oh
mind?
my goodness. That might be a question for another day because I have so many thoughts on it. You know, and just it's not just like a social media thing. It is literally, you know, it's literally voicing what we as people with HD are experiencing to the FDA, pharmaceutical companies, more than that, going into long-term care facilities. But it has to start at a government level, right? Because all of these programs feed into everything else. And so I, you know, it's basically getting loud at a government level and saying, look, we are just as important as all these other disease groups. And, you know, we are limited on time and we need you to listen. And I think we've taken the first step with that, with the FDA listening session, but we have a long way to go. But I think that I just have so many ideas when it comes to that. So yeah, we'll have to save that for another day, but I like that question and I'll definitely answer it.
I'm so glad we got 10 minutes left in our 30 minutes. Oh, wait, it's been an hour.
Yes. That's okay. That's why the show is what it is.
Just got on, Lauren.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I have totally enjoyed it.
That's crazy.
So do you have any, before I let you go, because I mean, we could probably talk for hours about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with any of the community?
I will say that I think we should just stay positive, choose to be positive. Just choose to be positive. There's a million reasons to not be positive and to be negative, but just like choose to be, it's a choice. And I just feel with so many clinical trials and things I've felt falling through, and I feel like we're in this space right now, this lull. And I mean, and it's like people get scared or lose hope or faith. And I just want to tell people to like, just try to stay positive and keep that hope, just keep it.
Yeah.
That's all we have, basically.
Yeah, that's great. Chris, thank you so much for sharing what you have. I mean, we really delved deep today, and I really appreciate that you were so open and raw. And I don't know about you, but like after I share stuff like that, I get drained and have to be like quiet for a little while. But I appreciate that you did it.
And I'll be okay. Don't you worry about it.
So for those that are listening, I do want to encourage you to tune in on Saturday. We are doing a Help for HD Hype Education Day. The theme is yes, no, maybe so. And we will have some research updates that are really exciting that will hopefully bring some hope to people. Specifically, I think Prelenia is going to be on there. And I can't even remember the other ones right now, but that is 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can go to helpforhd.org to find out more information. And I know Katie and Katrina will also be sharing it on social media, the live stream of it, so people will be able to watch. But another great thing is Dr. Ed Wild will be on to answer questions for the community, which he's always a blast to listen to. So I highly encourage you to tune in if you can on Saturday for that really great event. And until next time, guys.
Thank you so much for all you do. You hear me? Hear me? I'm serious. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
So much, because you're like in the fight and you are like, oh my god, yes.
Well, thank you, Chris, I really appreciate that. And you know, just like you, I'm just trying to be a voice for those with HD, and And this is a passion for me to make a difference, you know?
Yes, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And Grayson said you too.
Yes. Well, I want to pet the dog so bad. I can't see the dog and I'm like, oh, I want to pet it. I love Great Danes, by the way. But so for anybody also, let me mention this. If you are wanting to participate in these HD Uncut shows that are happening monthly, please reach out to me. My email is Lauren, and that's Lauren at HELP, the number 4, HD.org. And we will set up a show so you guys can come on, and it is uncensored, uncut, real topics, the real HD. So
now see you in Scotland.
Oh, I know, I'm so excited about going to Scotland. So yes, yeah. We'll have to have a great time there. Yes, it'll be great. So anyway, for people listening, make sure that you tune in every Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and love you guys and take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to visit www.helpforhd.org and sign up for our email newsletter to stay up to date on all that is going on at Help for HD. Get social with us and like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to Help for HD TV on YouTube, and ring the bell for notifications.